When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Something I want to talk about.
Let me swallow my radish. Let me get that down. Okay, I'm ready.
You ready? Okay. One of you two, shout out something you're afraid of.
Oh, God.
Failing.
Okay, at what?
Career.
Okay. So, is there something ever that you're afraid to do in that area? Like, you're afraid to take a risk, you're afraid to leave a job, start your own business, or, like, is there something specific where it pertains?
Lately, I've been really into photography.
Okay.
Like, really, really into photography. My dream would be to, you know, shoot for Vice and do photojournalism and stuff for them.
Okay.
And I'd be terrified to leave the comfort of radio and then take a chance on that and then not have the opportunity to come back and continue.
Okay. So, we're going to talk about moving through fear, and we talk about this a lot, but I realize that there is one key question that we haven't really discussed, and it's the most important one. So, ready? You're afraid of something. You're going to ask 3 questions. Here we go, Jake. You try, and you fail. Time 1. Now what?
Now I go back to square one, and hopefully there's still a job for me in radio so I can pay my rent.
Okay, but here's the thing, sweetie. Any trying and failing is recoverable. There are very few instances where you'll try something and fail at it and it isn't recoverable. And things that are not recoverable are pretty much death. That's kind of the only thing that is not recoverable. You know how many people have started businesses, gone bankrupt, and gone on to become billionaires, millionaires? It's like anything is recoverable. So, okay, I fail, and oh my gosh, it's such a failure. Oh, okay. Well, the goal is learn from the mistake, go back, reapproach it, and whatever went wrong is recoverable. Even if you ask out a girl, right? You're like, I like this girl. Oh, I'm so afraid to ask her out. What if she says no? Well, all right. It might hurt your ego. It might not be fun, obviously, to get rejected, but are you going to die from it? No. It's recoverable. You'll move forward. You'll live to date another day. You'll live to shoot pictures another day. So all you're really getting, if you try and you fail, the question becomes, how bad is it? Is it recoverable? And what can I learn? Okay, now, here's the most important part of this equation. What if you do nothing? What happens?
absolutely nothing happens.
Not true. So let's say you're a little bit unhealthy, mm-hmm. but you do nothing. Do you stay a little bit unhealthy?
You get worse.
You get worse. So it's not nothing. If you have a relationship that's tense and you're starting to have some communication issues and resentment is starting to build, you do nothing. What happens?
You start to hate each other.
And get divorced, break up, whatever. So people think very often that if they do nothing, they don't have to deal with the vulnerability and the fear of trying and failing. And it's the safe place to be. But the reality is nothing will always play out to your worst case scenario. Every single time.
I like where this is going. I like this segment.
So, okay, you do nothing. You want to be a photographer, you do nothing. Well, where do you end up? Very unfulfilled and regretful as an older man. Wondering, what if, angry that you didn't, disappointed and self-loathing because you could have and never tried, and you never get to do the thing you were the most passionate about. You'll never know. You'll never learned anything. You'll have never grown. You'll have never saw where it led you. Radio is always there. You can always come back to radio. You have the skill set. So even if you're in a job that's temporary and you're building a bridge to something else, that's okay because it's a means to an end. It's a step within your goal pyramid, your goal pursuit strategy. But that question you've got to ask, the way that we move through fear most effectively is to play out, what if you do nothing? It's always bad. And then the positive motivation and the incentive is, well, what if it works out? And that's the why. And we spend a lot of time talking about your why, right? Like, what is it that you want for yourself? And emotionally connecting to the goal. And Jake, how do you feel now that you're out there taking photos and doing what you love? Like, how does it feel? What's a day in your life look like? Like, how excited are you to go to work? What kind of camera do you have? What do the pictures that you're taking look like? And you connect to the why. And that why helps you, like, ooh, I'm going to get uncomfortable here because it's worth it, right? If you have that why to live for, you can tolerate the how. Because any how of goal achievement involves risk and vulnerability. But if that why is not moving you enough because the fear is so great, what if I do nothing? That's the key question. Minutes?
Yeah, well, I've asked that many times.
And?
Well, things have happened.
What?
No, I just...
What are you talking about?
No, I mean, I have gone out and you know, I've laid myself out in this show all the time about the
but
stuff I've
But you don't
done.
Move, and you never say, what if I do nothing? So, like, you're paralyzed, and you're afraid to date. Why?
I'm not afraid to date.
Oh, yes, you are.
I am not.
When's the last time you had a date?
2008. I'm not afraid. Hey, that's like time to eat my sandwich. Let's move on to something else.
No!
I am not afraid!
Yes, you are.
That does, just because you haven't dated in how long? 13.
Why are you not on OkCupid? Why are you not on Plenty of Fish? Why are you not on Match.com?
Because I don't want to do that.
Why?
I don't know. I think it's just...
I don't know.
I believe that the person... that you're supposed to meet will just fall out of the bush.
That's entitlement. You have to do the work.
I am working. I stay healthy. I stay fit.
You have to go out into the world.
I'm
you have
nice
to put
to
yourself
people.
Out there.
I'm
no.
nice to
you
people.
Don't put yourself out there because you're afraid of rejection. You don't invite people over. You've put yourself in a cocoon and you know it. You haven't talked about it.
We've already discussed this so many times.
No,
people
we
are so sick of hearing
no.
about me and my
Listen
cocoon
to me.
And the fact that I haven't been laid and
but
at least
you're missing
a
the
decade.
Point. You're missing the point.
Not a decade.
You still haven't. You still have not moved out of it, and you've finally gotten to a place where you've decided, as you said, that maybe this peaceful, shut-in existence that you've created for yourself is not what you want.
Yes, I must admit. I must admit that I miss your kids,
Lueberg.
I miss
missed the Berg.
The Berg.
No, it was very interesting being out of my cocoon for 2 months and mm-hmm. being on the bus with your family. It was fun and it was funny and it was challenging.
So finally there's like a why of like, oh, you know, because it's likely that people your day could have kids. It's likely that...
Oh, I wouldn't know what to do with that. But anyway.
Same thing you did with Luberg.
Yeah.
And shorts.
Me and the Berg and the shorts. We got along pretty good.
The shorts meister.
Yeah.
So my point here is, Janice, it's like you become a shut-in. Now you're like, maybe I do want companionship. So what if you do nothing?
Well, I'm not going to do nothing. I've decided I'm going to do something.
When?
Like when I get back from from the podcast. I'm going to go to a sock hop.
No, you're not.
I am.
There's no such thing.
There's a sock hop coming up.
I think this is just you're full of crap. Jake, stop down and find the stop.
Well, can I join you in your time machine?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you talking about?
What is a sock hop?
Sock hop?
That sounds like the 50s, like Greece.
You know what?
Yeah, she's lying again.
No, I'm not lying. Fine. Why do I have to go to a club?
Where's the sock hop?
No, don't go to a club. Meet somebody at a...
Online.
Oh, God. You know
where
what?
Is it?
This is so boring for people. We've talked about
this. No, it's boring for you.
I will do it. No, you know what? I'll do it when I'm ready to do it. I will do it when I'm ready to do it. I'm not going to go online. It makes me uncomfortable.
Where's the sock hop?
I'm not telling you where the sock hop is. And it's not in a time machine. It's what old people like me do. We dance like this. Sock hop. What's the matter with that? It's like a fun old time thing to do.
I don't believe you're going.
I don't want to go and listen to Gitchy Gitchy Goomy. I don't want to go.
What is she talking about, Gitchy Gitchy Goomy?
I don't want to go to a bar because I'm
not talking about bars. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about online.
You know what? I'm just going to eat my sandwich. Not everybody wants to go online. Would you go online?
If I wasn't famous, yes. If I was single and not famous in a heartbeat, yeah.
Well.
Like, you can't do it famous, like, obviously. You just target, you know, for nutballs.
Weird.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, in a heartbeat, yeah, everybody I know is online, and they meet, like, all their partners.
To be honest, I was online
Everybody's
for a little
on
bit,
there.
Janice.
That OKCupid and the match and the whole thing.
Let's go back to the...
But the point, Jay, is what if you do nothing? That's what you're missing.
I'm not planning on doing nothing.
Okay, but you've done nothing for a really long time.
Yeah, and you know what? I went through a very severe thing. And you know what? Sometimes it takes a while to come out of that. It really does.
But it's been, you said 2008. That's 5 years.
No, I'm talking about my mom.
I know, Mama.
So
but...
you know what? Sometimes things take time. And I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to go out and pretend that I'm comfortable dating when I've got stuff to take care of. It's going to happen when it's going to happen.
It's not.
Well, I'm going to eat my sandwich and enjoy myself. I'm happy. I'm not unhappy. Yeah, it was great going out and tour, and I thank you for that experience. I really do. It got me out. It got me with people again. It was fun. We had a great time. So you know what? It lit a fire for me.
So then the conversation of, like, it becomes, what if I do nothing? It's more... aloneness.
Well, wait. You guys just got back from tour.
I've been home.
So let's see what this next between recording dates does for Janice. Maybe it will have actually lit a fire for her, and, you know, she'll miss being with people, right, Janice? And meeting new people and the experiences that you got.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's possible.
Yeah,
look at her. She's kind of smirking over here.
No. She's thinking about it. Look, Janice, whether or not Janice does nothing or not, The conversation that you should be having with yourself when you're trying to move through a state of paralysis is looking at what happens if you stay paralyzed, because it's not nothing. It gets worse. Neglect is corrosive. It's always a worst-case scenario that will unfold, no matter what fear or what thing you're afraid of pursuing. And I just don't think we've ever had that conversation before. We've had the why you need to do it, and we've had the you'll recover from any failure and learn from it and so on, but we've not actually looked at what happens if you don't go one way or the other.
Right.
And that's the worst case.
Right.
Oh, God, now she's going to want something snappy.
Mm-hmm. I do. I want something real snappy.
You don't deserve it today.
I
Janice, I'm excited.
I know you are.
I'm excited. You know why?
I will. Tell me why.
We have a little sponsor.
Really?
Yeah. Wait,
tell me. Tell me about it, Jillian.
Yeah. And it make not only does it make us seem official, it makes us sound literate.
Literate?
Literate. Like we read. Oh. Which I do, by the way. But now I can tell everybody that I read.
All right.
Which just, like, helps to enhance my depth of character. Okay, so Audible.com.
Yes.
He's sponsoring our little podcast, and they have a special offer for our listeners. So you go to www.audiblepodcast.com/exercise, and they're giving a free audiobook and a 30-day trial for free by signing up.
Very cool. Very cool.
Okay, so you got to read Gone Girl. Everybody's reading it. It's awesome. I can't give it away. Only smart people get it, though, of course. But I you might understand it. I think you should try.
You know, someone should hurt you one day.
No, I highly recommend it. I think you'll like it.
Gone Girl?
Yeah.
All right.
Wait. I have to spell the URL for people. This is important. Okay. So everybody, for the free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audible.com, go to www.audiblepodcast.com/exercise. audiblepodcast.com/exercise. Huh? So I was having a conversation with my pediatrician the other day, which my poor pediatrician, most of our conversations turn into a debate. I swear to God. And we ended up getting into a dialogue about how much kids need to eat. And I found this fascinating because did you know that a baby should eat more than a toddler?
And a baby?
Yes, a baby should eat more than a toddler because after their first year of life, their growth slows down by about 30%. So an infant needs to eat about 35 to 50 calories per pound, and a toddler requires 35 to 40 calories per pound.
Hang on. If a baby's 30, how big are babies? I don't even
per
know.
Per pound, though. So, like, on a per-pound basis, they should be consuming more food. So,
I see what you're saying. Gotcha.
So, like, if Phoenix is born at 9 pounds, then he's consuming between 35 to 50 calories per pound in a day. And then, as he, of course, grows, like, the kid is doubled in size. He's, like, 24 pounds in the first year of his life. We haven't actually weighed him recently, but he was 20 something about 4 months ago, so he's 3 times I think he's 3 times his birth size, 3 times. So I think we just don't know how much to feed our kids. And I was like, my daughter, I can't figure it out. Like, sometimes she eats so much food it's staggering, sometimes she doesn't eat at all. I don't know what to do. So here's some tips. So first off, your kid, right? Starting from 1 to 3, you should be giving them 35 to 40 calories per pound. So, all right, if lose 30 pounds and we go on the high side of 40 calories, if she's consuming 1,200 calories a day, okay. But think, like, if you take your kids to a fast food place,
yeah, it's a one.
A small fries is 400, 500 calories. So, yeah. I mean, they're getting over. If you get them a Happy Meal, and there's a soda in there, a Coke is like 100, 150 calories.
So in one meal, they can get
think
their
about it. They're like already over half, I would imagine. So, okay. But in truth, also, it's interesting because then you feed them healthy food and it seems like enormous portions. So that's a good range, all right, for kids that are 1 to 3. Now, here's what's interesting about this is that, like, with my daughter, I always want her to eat meals because I'm like, oh, gosh, she's going to – oh, it's so annoying because then in a few hours, she's hungry.
Right.
And then you've seen her. She's like, eat. And it's like she has a meltdown. But so I was always like, okay, sweetie, just a few more bites because I wanted her to eat so she wouldn't have a meltdown and get hungry later. And I ended up learning, I of all people you'd think would have known this, that's the worst thing you should do is encourage them to eat. If they tell you they're done, they're done. So with toddlers.
Do kids have that brain?
Yes, they know when they're full. And toddlers graze. So that's what a toddler does. So you should just plan with your toddler to feed them every 2 to 3 hours. And if they didn't eat enough at lunch, like, they'll make it up when they eat 2 to 3 hours later. And I noticed my daughter has breakfast, goes to school, has a snack at 10, has lunch at 1, has a snack after her nap. We pick her up, has a snack again before dinner. And, you know, it's like she snacks. It's like she does eat every couple of hours, and every couple of hours she's hungry. But don't try to. And one of my friends is like, I just put my daughter in front of Sesame Street, and it's like the only time I can shovel food in her mouth. And I, for some reason, we're always trying to shovel food in their faces because we're like, ugh, they don't eat, they don't eat. And it's something I personally have felt like I need to achieve. I need to get her to eat. That's my job. But you're teaching them to eat when they're not hungry. And they start, like, they don't.
But what if they don't? What if they're one of those kids that just doesn't eat?
They'll eat when they're hungry.
I suppose.
They will eat when they're hungry. Yeah, you're
right.
You've got to be flexible and allow them to graze. And another thing that I have been so. Now, my mom pointed this out to me the other day because, like, so when I was a kid, it was like, oh, you have a babysitter, but you can pick out anything you want from the bakery. So my mom was babysitting, and we were going to dinner, and, of course, Lou was crying because she hates when she loves my mom, but it doesn't matter. She doesn't like when she leaves, when we leave. I don't want you to leave. I don't want to, you know, she doesn't like it. So I was like, but I'm like, do you want, you know, I pulled out a peanut butter cup and a cookie, like, you know, a Newman's peanut butter cup or, I'm sorry, an Unreal peanut butter cup or a Newman's peanut butter cookie. And I was like, which one do you want? And I was trying to, I was obviously comforting her with food in a way that I didn't even realize. I was like distracting. And my mom goes, oh, okay, honey, how about what treat do you want from the bakery? Like, you hypocrite. Because I've given her grief for that as an adult. And like, I didn't even realize what I was doing. And then, oh, if you're a good girl, you're going to get a little scoop of ice cream today, but you got to be a good girl. And you're rewarding them with food.
And who knew that that's when that
started? And you don't even realize that's a food bribe, flat out. A few more bites of this, and then I'll give you dessert. Don't do that.
We had the magic three.
What was the magic three?
Magic three is three more bites. Like,
if
we could get through three more bites of the porridge or, you know, whatever it was that we didn't like, then we get the magic
three. And apparently, psychologically, it teaches them, this is the yucky stuff. Just tolerate this to get to the cookie.
To get to the good stuff.
And then they're like, oh, this is crap. Oh, I don't want this. This is forced upon me. Not, oh, yum. Oh, this can be good. And it can be. It's amazing. Like, she thinks salad is the greatest thing on the planet because we eat it. But we ruin that in them inadvertently.
Right.
So no food bribes. Don't force them to eat. Allow them to graze. And then just a few other tips. Like, when your kids become 4 to 6, they need around 1,500 to 1,750 calories a day.
Wow.
And you want to stop in on that because apparently – this is a statistic that I read about in Eating Well magazine. Kids at that age consume 40% or more of their calories when they're away from us. So school,
right?
Pretty much at a buddy's house, a snack. And they suggested, I really liked this, making a lunch date. Going like, a lot of kids will allow, like, drop in on your kid at school and just visit. But you can see what they're eating.
Oh, I see.
You get to kind of see what they're eating and what they're doing. And at this age, and I think this is so interesting because I've often wondered about this with Lou, because you see how she's like, I'm going to eat, eat. Mm-hmm. And you're like, there's no way she's hungry. I just fed her. And now, it doesn't say 3. She just turned 3. But it says from 4 to 6 is when you need to start watching out for emotional eating. And are they using food for boredom and even anxiety? And to use a hunger scale with them. And it's not like, oh, you're overeating. Like, don't shame them about it. But do it, like, under the pretense of the size of their snack. So, you know, 0 is totally empty. 10 is totally full. 5 is, like, you're not hungry and you're not full. So you kind of say, like, sweetheart, you know, we just ate. Are you feeling anxious about something? Are you feeling stressed about something? How are you, you know, like, you kind of ask them if they're...
God, it's such an adult thing to ask a child. It's just, I mean, I know that they understand, but it just seems so adult to me.
You kind of help them give words to their feelings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you help them problem solve instead of, like, medicating the situation with food.
Yeah.
Is something going on? What's going on, Bud? Are you sure you're hungry? We just ate. What's going on? You feeling stressed? And I can absolutely see myself asking Lou that because I can tell when she does it. And I eat. And I'm like, you're not hungry. There's no way you're hungry. And she's anxious. She definitely, poor thing. She definitely has. I know when she's anxious. I've seen it. And it's definitely stems from, you know, the things she's been through. And it's always like when someone's leaving or someone's going somewhere, yeah. Where are you going? Or don't go. And eat. Ugh, she gets, you know, oh, poor thing. I mean, you know, with the baby, I don't see it at all.
Can she get food herself? Is there food like in the house that she can actually go to herself and help herself?
Both of them walk to the fridge.
And they can, is there something they can get?
She'll tell me what she wants. Like, I want peanut butter.
She won't take it.
No, because it's usually in the cabinet up above her head.
Right.
Or, in the refrigerator, it's like it's hard to open the refrigerator. And so both of them will walk to the fridge. He walks to the fridge now and tries to open the door and just starts, like, grabbing everything in there. But, you know, kids under one, you think you're a god when they eat everything, and they do under one. But then they get more finicky, and you got to work with it
a little bit,
be a little bit more flexible, of course. But it's fascinating. And I don't know, I just thought... For me to be making those mistakes, you know other parents are making those mistakes.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting, so I thought I'd share it.
No, it is. Especially the emotionally eating it.
She does it, Jay. I see
five,
it.
At 5, you know? Like,
I
that's
see it at 3.
Fascinating to me.
3 years old.
Wow. I just thought it was such an adult
There's
thing.
No way. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
All right. I was reading my little article that you hate about all these little things to be good about yourself. And one says, practice decent hygiene. And it's true.
Like, that's what you want to talk about right now?
Well, I always remember in my early radio days,
okay.
We did a thing where, you know how there are some, and I don't mean to be rude, but there's some people don't practice hygiene. Okay? They just... Well, I don't know why. There could be reasons if it's whatever. But we did this thing on the radio, and to this day, I just think it was just a horrible thing to do.
Okay.
But the radio morning show thing was, if you know someone who stinks, put a note on their desk that says, you stink. If you want some help, we're here to help you. Right. And so people around the city were putting notes who they thought. And I just thought, what a terrible thing. Can you imagine sitting down at your desk?
Janice,
if I leave this room and I come back
and, like,
and there's a post-it note on my.
Jake and I would like to talk to you.
Janice.
You stink, buddy.
It's not.
No, I don't stink because I go to great lengths so I don't stink. I know when I get funky ass, and so I take care of it.
Stink a lot of moose.
No, I don't. I'm not a stink a lot of moose.
Stinky Magoo.
I make sure I use deodorant. Sometimes probably not good because I know sometimes deodorant.
Stinky McGee.
And I clean my area.
Ooh.
Ooh, wow. That's.
I'm just saying.
Mother of God.
Really? Like, have you ever been to a yoga class and somebody doesn't use deodorant or someone hasn't cleaned the area? I'm telling you, there's.
Oh.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Oh, God.
I think it's our responsibility.
It is. It's an awkward conversation to have, but it's our responsibility.
Yeah, I don't think you should be putting notes on people's desks saying you stink.
How about this one? When my mom was younger, in middle school, there's a girl that stunk. And for Valentine's Day, they wrapped a deodorant stick in a bow and put it inside of her desk.
Yeah, now you see that, but you see that's a tough call. Because sometimes, I know younger kids, sometimes the parent won't let them use deodorant. Like a parent, if they have certain beliefs, they won't
There's
let the
child. There's a belief system that says no deodorant?
We were in,
what religion
in fifth,
is that?
Yeah, what is what
it's
is
called
that?
The stankapusses of, I don't know, I'm just saying.
What god do you think they pray to?
The smelly one.
My just, god.
I'm just saying that. Proper, like, brush your teeth, floss.
I just want people to hear this because, so for those of you listening, when you think like, oh, how do we decide what we're going to talk about on the show? There's usually a think tank and a conversation that occurs, and then Janice, offers up her suggestions.
No,
and,
it's on my little it's little
and,
lists of things on how to
this
be
is,
ways to be cool.
Offering.
This is ways to be cool. And I thought, oh, that's a cool little list. And I was reading it. And then it came to practice hygiene. And I went, you know what? That's true. That we should practice.
Can I see that?
Proper hygiene. Look, and there's a picture of the boy with bad breath. And the girl's going, ooh, nasty.
Do you really?
It looks like he's blowing fire onto her.
Be sure. Excuse me. Be sure
she
to brush your
teeth. She just belched in the freaking microphone. Okay, Stinky Magoo.
And but you know what's also offensive is too much of the perfume too. Have you ever been to a? I go swimming 3 times a week, and for some reason there's a dude on Wednesday night who puts cologne on in the GD pool. Okay, there's nothing worse like being like you know Mark Spitz. I can't think of the other guy. Michael Phelps. Let me get into this generation. Hang on. I'm getting up there.
Most medaled athlete in the entire history.
Well, Mark Spitz
of...
was before him. Okay. And all of a sudden it was like Calvin Klein in the back of your gonads. I mean your larynx.
Your gonads.
Sorry, I read the wrong
part. Gonads are testicles.
I know. I forgot. Well, what are these called back here?
Tonsils.
Tonsils. I got them mixed up. I have a goiter, so. I get them.
In the back of your gonads.
I'm just saying.
This is what this woman would be
Jillian,
like if left to her own devices.
I'm just
These
saying.
These are the kinds of conversations she has with herself.
Jillian, you have smelled smelly people. It's a responsibility.
I just walk away.
You have to
clean. If you're stuck with them. This we're talking about if you're stuck with them, right?
Everybody has to clean their areas.
What are you doing?
Do you know what an area is?
What is the takeaway here? What are you trying to say?
The takeaway is that we have, when you go to a class or when you're finished your class and you're going back to the office or to your partner or whatever, or if you're going to possibly be intimate with someone, make sure things are clean. Make sure to clean all the bits.
This is what you want to share with people?
Sure. I didn't ask for the mics to be turned on. I was simply reading my little article, and then all of a sudden I looked up and the light was on.
Would you like me to try to salvage this with some takeaway?
Yes.
It's like a public service announcement, like, yo,
here
listener.
Here's the takeaway. Ready? Here we go. If you feel like you're one of those people who are going to post it on your desk, all right, number one, obviously, clean diet is going to make you stink less. So don't eat, like, a ton of processed, junky food.
Yeah.
And don't eat a ton of garlic unless it's, like, you know, because you'll stink. There's something called body mint or breath assure, or even if you just take drops of chlorophyll, it's a natural body deodorizer. Mm-hmm. If you have a gas problem, try some digestive enzymes. Floss, brush your teeth, and you can get Botox under your armpits if you don't use deodorant. Okay, can we do something else now?
Well, I think that was very helpful. Thank you, and good night.
Good, because the love doctor's in.
Yes, I see you have your smock on.
I do.
So,
So spectacles.
I would like to introduce you to Rob, who is waiting to talk to you, Love Doctor.
Hello, Rob.
Hello, Jillian, a.k.a. Love Doctor.
Thank you. Yes, how can I help?
I am calling because, first of all, thank you for talking to me.
Oh, gosh, honey, no, thanks for calling in.
I am calling because, in a nutshell, 12 years ago, my husband and I met.
Yeah.
And when we met, I had lost 100 pounds. I was very active. He was very active. He took me on some incredible hikes. And fast forward, life happens.
Sure.
And I gained a lot of the weight back. I became inactive. And in that time period, he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Now, fast forward time again, and years have gone by, and there was a long period where I didn't do anything. I didn't participate, didn't exercise, nothing. And now I've lost a bunch of weight, 60 pounds.
Wow.
And I've gotten active again.
Okay.
The problem is I love to go hiking. I love to go bike riding.
Right.
And the problem is that because of his MS, he can walk like maybe a mile or so.
Okay.
But he can't do the intensity that I can do.
Sure.
And I need the activity because it decreases my anxiety. I just feel a lot better.
Sure you do. Yeah.
But the problem is that when I do these activities without him, he becomes very angry.
Why?
And he tells me, well, why didn't you do this when I wanted to, when I could do it? And then I'll even plan little activities.
Why does that matter? Well, why is that even relevant? Have you asked?
I have, and he doesn't give me the answer. I think it's because he's angry because of what he can't do.
Okay, but you need him to get to you're right, but it's like okay, keep talking, because the goal here is to get him to understand
right. What's
really going on for himself.
Right.
But anyway, go on.
But it's really causing a lot of problems because I want to go hiking. I want to do these things. I also plan activities that he can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That are good because we can do something together.
Sure.
And he can accomplish some goals for himself. But I have to do the higher intensity stuff because it makes me feel better. But every time I plan this activities, his anger is getting worse and worse.
So
and
it's
then now it's getting to the point where I've stopped doing some of it again, which is not good because I just don't get in a good place.
Well, you're just going to resent that anyway, which is, that's the irony, is that whenever we do things to protect, we go, oh, okay, I'm not going to set boundaries, and I'm not going to assert my needs, because I'm worried it will create a falling out in the relationship. But of course, by not setting boundaries and not asserting needs, we build resentment, and then we end up leaving anyway,
correct,
ultimately creating the end of the relationship. So, all right, just for my clarification, so he gets mad when you do things together, or he gets mad when you do the intense stuff on your own, or he's always mad?
No, he gets mad when I plan the intense activities that he can't do.
Okay. And so he's saying you shouldn't be able to do these things on your own?
It's very confusing because on the one hand, he encourages me.
Okay.
You know, like, for example, he'll say, you know, how come you haven't gone to Bob's spin class for a while?
Okay.
And then I'll go, but then he'll complain that I'm gone forever. And then I ask him if he wants to go, but then he doesn't want to go. So it's a very mixed message.
Right. All right. Okay. So obviously he just feels insecure, like you'll outgrow him. You'll get healthy and he won't be able to keep up, and you'll want a partner that will keep up. And so it's like we can understand what this is about, but the reality is you have to get him to understand what this is about.
Correct.
So have you communicated to him, honey, I'm getting mixed messages from you and I'm confused?
I do, and part of the issue is that he doesn't like to talk about his feelings.
This is it. This is a much bigger problem.
Correct.
So that becomes... Do you even want to stay in a relationship with somebody who can't do that?
Correct.
Because if somebody is not able to talk about their feelings, you're not able to work through issues.
Right.
So this is beyond, like, I'm feeling insecure, I'm worried you're going to outgrow me, can I be validated, can I be incorporated and come to a place of comfort? You're now telling me about a much deeper and bigger problem that will require a tremendous amount of time and work to resolve. 12 years is a long time.
I'm not a believer, though, of, like, I have a couple of friends. Please don't understand. I'm not telling you to break up with this man. I don't even know the dynamics of the relationship. But I have a couple of friends, and they've been together 7 years. And the relationship, in my opinion, is over. And one of my friends is like, but we have so much time together. And I was like, okay. So what are you trying to say? Well, we've put in the time, but you'll waste future time being in a relationship that is not making either one of you happy anymore. So you can't allow the past to dictate your decisions right now unless it's, oh, I'm learning a lesson from the past, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I went through this. I took this lesson. I'm changing my approach because I've gotten wiser from it. That's a different conversation. But you can't allow the past as in, well, you know, look at all this time. I should stay, or I'm obligated to stay, or I've invested so much. You know, I don't want to lose that investment. You'll lose more.
Correct.
So this is a far bigger conversation. And I think you need to ask yourself, number one, how much do you love this person? Is there more good than there is bad in the relationship? Because as we all know, relationships are not perfect. There's going to be good and there's going to be bad. And I've always said the grass is not greener. It's greener where you water it.
Correct.
But then it becomes, okay, if he is not able to evolve very quickly and begin conversing with you, having an open dialogue with you, taking responsibility for his feelings, you, of course, you know, expressing his feelings, you're not going to get anywhere in any facet of this relationship. And this is where if a person is not – if both parties are willing to look at their side of the street, take responsibility, and move forward, then you're somewhere, right? That's when I go, well, things might be dysfunctional, but every relationship is dysfunctional. And if you guys are both able to take responsibility and to work on it, you've got somewhere to go. But if one of these parties is not willing to go, oh, I see what I'm contributing – I see what's going on with me, or let me keep an open mind, then you have no way forward. So that's the bigger question. Is there more good than bad, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe he will be able to get into – you guys are probably going to need counseling – because you're going to need some help with him learning how to express his feelings, and someone's going to need to come in and teach him how to communicate and teach you how to listen and validate him and him how to listen and validate you and how to clearly and calmly express needs to one another and how to try to understand the feelings that are coming up and the behavior that's being acted out. Is he willing to do that?
We'll see. I mean, only the true test will tell.
Have you ever asked him?
Well, we've tried it before, and with other issues, it has not worked.
Okay. So, okay, so you see the theme, right?
Yes.
Okay. I think you need an ultimatum here, honey. And I think it goes like this. We have a recurring theme in our relationship. I see it manifest in the following ways. And this fitness situation or circumstance you have going on is just obviously one of a host of issues, and I would list them. And I feel that obviously in a relationship, it takes two. You know, we both have a side. There are two sides to the street, two sides to an argument, two sides to the story. There's no right. There's no wrong. There's no assigning blame. But if we cannot get to a place where we're conscious of what we're contributing and we're able to take responsibility, then we can't resolve it. So I love you, but I see this going down a dangerous path for both of us. And I want us to save this relationship. And the only way I see that happening is by getting into therapy and learning how to do all those things I just mentioned. And what would be the response to that?
He would be willing to go to therapy.
Okay. And
I mean that I do know.
Okay. And what do you think his response would be beyond that?
Part of the issue that we've had is I'm 47. Since I was 21, I've always going through some self-realization trainings. I've learned how to take a look at what my part in everything is to try to become a better person.
Right.
The problem is that he's from a very different past, and he's not used to doing that. So for him to do that is very uncomfortable, and he's never really done that. And
that's where our
issues have lied.
I hear you, but then you're obviously playing at this role where you're either trying to save him, you're trying to please him, you're trying to heal him, you're trying to fix him.
Yeah, it's probably all the above.
Okay, well, but that has to stop.
Because
that's a negative pattern you're engaging in. So for your own mental well-being, you have to stop doing that. So it's like, I need this from you. And I need us to get into therapy. I'm experiencing the following things. I need you to express your feelings. I need you to understand why you're doing what you're doing, and so on. And honey, if you cannot change, I really do think you might need to question this.
Yep.
What are you fighting for? Tell me what you're fighting for here.
I think it's just the the fear of the uncomfortable of maybe having to come to that realization that maybe it is time to move on.
See, if you, I want to hear, like, I here's my concern. My friend's dad, after a ton of years in marriage, and I mean a ton, I want to say 30 years, is unhappy in his marriage and is considering a divorce. And he's like, the dad said to my friend, his son, I just don't want to be alone. And I was like, well, you're staying in this dynamic and not, you've been alone in it. You live downstairs, she lives upstairs in the same house, and you'll continue to be alone. You are alone. So the thing you're afraid of, you've manifested.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is, if you're saying, well, I'm afraid of being alone, well, you'll become alone. I'm afraid of, because this will end via resentment either way, or you will grow apart in the context of the relationship and be alone in the relationship, was, by the way, the worst way of feeling alone. I don't mind being alone, but being alone with someone, that really makes you feel terrible.
Correct.
That's, in my opinion, that's the worst of the worst, because you're like, oh my God, I can't connect. Like, being alone is one thing, but being unable to connect is a whole new depth of aloneness, in my personal experience and opinion. So if it's, you know, fear that's keeping you in this, wrong answer. If it's your pathology that's keeping you in this of like, no, I'm the good boy, I'm the savior, I'm gonna fix this, and I'm gonna fix him, and I'm gonna make this right, and that's not good for you and not good for him and not a reason to stay. But if you were like, he is hilarious and I am madly in love with him and we have the best conversations and he teaches me so much about X, Y, or Z. If you could run down that list, you know, then I'd, okay, you know, let's break him down with a hammer and a chisel. But after 12 years of getting nowhere is what you're telling me, that's not good, sweetie. You got to sit down and weigh out the pros and the cons of this circumstance. Ask yourself what you're truly fighting for, and if in fact it is all positive things that you're holding on to, then you've got to force him with an ultimatum to start doing this work. Because people will change when it becomes painful enough.
Mm-hmm.
So if the threat of the relationship being over is real and not an actual threat, there's a chance it will catalyze him to do the work. Because it'll be more painful to lose you and to lose the relationship than it will be for him to start expressing himself and looking at himself. And that's the only way forward. I shouldn't say that's the only way forward. In my opinion, it is an effective way to move forward.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense.
So think about it.
I will.
All right, honey? But no matter what, do not stop working out, because all you'll do is hate him for it and hate yourself for allowing it.
Yep. Yeah, it's not good.
No, that's a lose-lose.
I agree. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, sweetheart. Have a good day.
You too.
Oh, this relationship stuff is complicated.
No.
Complicated. You never want to be responsible for, like, oh, leave. But I didn't hear, like, There was nothing I heard in there that told me to tell him to stay.
I know. That's just the thing.
I listened, and I listened, and I pushed, and I repeated myself, waiting to hear something that made me want to tell him to fight.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
And everything in me was like, he needs to leave, he needs to leave, he needs to leave. And then there's going to be the guilt of, I can't leave him, he has multiple cirrhosis.
Yeah.
Which, it's not about that. That's not why you're leaving, so you don't have to feel bad. This relationship was effed. But for other reasons.
But look how people will look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, you, how could you?
How could you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's brutal.
Left him when
he's in a tough, he's, that's what you would call between a rock and a hard place.
I don't think so. I think you just, if it's not working and you've spent 12 years trying to make it work, it's time to go. Sorry. Mm. It's not like the guy just woke up today and was like, he can't work out with me. That's not what's happening. 12 years of trying to get this man to communicate his feelings and express himself. And he's getting nowhere. 12 years. So either the guy, he dumps him, and the guy goes, oh my God, I can change, or not. That's my opinion.
Well, it's a good one. It's a damn good one, Julie.
Well, it's not a clinical one.
No, and that's not why we're here.
I'm a doctor.
You're the love doctor, not the obstetrician.
No.
All right.
Levo Doctor.
Levo.
So,
we must go. We must call it a day.
Well, goodbye, Janice.
And goodbye,
good riddance.
And see you next time.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.